Hello, everybody. My name is Anthony W., and I'm a covering addict.
Hey, Anthony.
You know, I don't say I'm nervous. You know, it's 10 o'clock at night, 10:30, you know what I mean? Right? It is. Yeah. But, you know, first I want to thank the HACNA committee for allowing me to share my experience and hope and get an opportunity to do this workshop. This is really, really, really special to me on multiple levels. I have a friend in the front row that I've known for 33 years, you know, since we met the first year we got clean, Lake Whitney. I got a friend who's, we just joined the same home group in Atlanta last weekend. Atlanta, right? Our home group is the Just Say No group on Sundays at 1 o'clock on Cascade. If you're ever in Atlanta, come check us out. I have a friend in the front row, my son's friend that I just had the opportunity to meet. A friend from Tampa who was my home group member when I lived there. So it's special, right? Not only that, I was sitting in the main speaker all weekend. I've been looking at the banners, right? I've been to like the first five HACNAs. I was looking at that, 93, 94, 95, you know what I mean? So I Texas has a really special place in my heart. You know, I was born in Philadelphia. I grew up in New Jersey. I OD'd and I ended up in a hospital in New Year's Eve, 1991. I ended up in a recovery home in Kensington section of Philadelphia, if anybody knows anything about Kensington. They sent me to, I found out I was at a meeting on Broad Street in Philly, and it happened to be in a VA CBOC, and they were asking people, were they veterans? And I thought that you had to go to, like, Vietnam or World War II or something to be a vet. I didn't know that as long as you served 2 years in the military and got better than a dishonorable discharge that you qualified. So at that time, I wasn't, when I first found, or when Narcotics Anonymous found me, I wasn't looking for it, right? And I really didn't have a desire to stay clean, change my life for none of that. I just wanted the absence of the shit that was going on in my life at the time, right? And I wanted to get out of Dodge. And so they the dude found out I was a veteran, and they said, well, we got treatment programs like all over the country. And I had warrants out for my arrest at the time. And they said, well, if you go to treatment, it's like I didn't know what confidentiality was or any of that, right? And they said, but if you go to treatment, it's like the Vatican, you know, they can't come and get you. And I said, oh, sign me up, right? So they sent me to Wilkes-Barre, PA. Sent me to the Pocono Mountains, right? I had never been out of, like, Philly or Jersey, the urban life or whatever, and they sent me up to the mountains and shit, man. I didn't even know we had mountains in Pennsylvania, right? And I went through that program there, and they said, well, we got long-term programs called domiciliaries, you know, throughout the country. You know, would you like to go to that? And so they sent me to Temple, Texas. And I was in the VA in Temple, Texas, and I spent my first year clean in treatment, right? And it kind of started my path to recovery. You know, stayed in Temple, ended up going to Austin. Myself and my roommate from treatment and a good friend of mine, we were the founders of a group that's in Austin that's been there for 33 years now. Y'all probably heard Miracles and Solutions, right? I was one of the founders of that group, right? And what is so crazy, man, today, right, my big sis, love her to death, Adrian, she was the other founder with us, and she was from Fort Worth. I was from Philly, and Myron was from, we called him Gene back then, but he was from Connecticut, and we all ended up in Austin, right? And we started that group when there what people didn't have clean time back then. The old timer had two years. It was Lee Arthur, right? But my friend Adrian, yesterday she celebrated her 76th birthday, right? Oh, wow. And she's not doing well. You know, not only do we clock clean time, we get older in here, right? And so my friend is nobody has seen her in like years. She's not coming to the fellowship. She's not, you know, whatever. She's at odds with her daughter that lives in the same city. And I called a friend of her ex-husband and got information like to get her. She wasn't answering the phone or anything. Her daughter gave me I said, give me her address and I'm gonna just go do a drive-by, right? And I did. And she at first she didn't answer the door. She didn't answer the phone. But she came, and I said, hey, I said, put some clothes on. Let me take you out to the convention and stuff, right? And I brought her here earlier today, man, and she saw people she hadn't seen in a while. That was special to me, man. You know, special. But she's, you know, she couldn't stay up this late and this and that, and I got to catch a flight at 5 in the morning. So I had to take her back. But I got to hang out with, she's probably one of my closest friends in the whole world. You know what I'm saying? For the last, like, 30-something years, right? Not only that, yesterday, I got a friend that I've known since I was 9 years old back in Jersey. We ran track together. I boxed when I was young, right? And I ran track just for the endurance piece. But my friend, he was all that. You know what I mean? He ended up doing the Olympic thing and all that, whatever. But so he lives here in Houston now. He went to U of H back before he went to the Olympics and stuff. So anyway, he knew I was in town. And he came and we were gonna have dinner. So he was pulling up, and my son Tyrell and his lady were pulling up at the same time, right up front or whatever. So we all got to go out and eat and kick it, you know what I mean, or whatever. He's not in the fellowship, right? But I mean, so just these little things this weekend has been like, I'm so glad I came this weekend, right? I almost didn't get here. I had the travel thing from hell coming. I really did. I ain't going to go into that. But I'm going to read something. Hold on. I'm going to read something. I usually like to read something from our literature. All right. The ways in which we carry the message are varied as our members. There are, however, some basic guidelines that, as a fellowship, have found to be helpful. First and foremost, we share our experience, strength, and hope. This means that we share our experience, not theories we've heard from other sources. This also means that we share our own experience, not someone else's. I'm going to jump down. It says, developing a personal style for carrying the message rests on a simple requirement. We must be ourselves. We each have a special, one-of-a-kind personality that is sure to be an attraction to many. Some of us have a sparkling sense of humor, which may reach someone in despair. Some of us are especially warm and compassionate, able to reach an addict who has rarely been the recipient of kindness. Some of us have a remarkable talent for telling the truth in no uncertain terms to an addict literally dying to hear it, right? So I can only be me. Right. And I'm going to share my experience, strength and hope. Right. And it's funny. So this is the first time. So a lot of people know this is the first time my son and I have had an opportunity to do a workshop together. And it's super special to me. Right. Yeah. The topic about hope. Right. Like a lot of us have family members, have, you know, spouses, siblings, whatever. And we can't beat them upside the head with the basic text. Right. We can't drag them to whatever. It's the hope. Right. It's they see us. My son, when I was looking at my son, 94, the World Convention in Baltimore. Carolyn, she's in there, I think. We went to the World Convention in Baltimore, and when I left Jersey in 91 or whatever, right, my son was like, you know, 3-4 years old, right? Damn near in diapers or whatever, 1899. Anyway, he was little, right? Right? But I hadn't seen him, and I'm down here in Texas doing the VA thing, doing whatever, and the World Convention happened, and I had about 2 years clean, and I got a chance to go home, and I was scared, man. I hadn't been that far removed from the lifestyle and all that, and my sponsor at the time said, he said, you ain't gonna run into none of them people unless you somewhere you got no business being, or they in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, right? That's what he said, right? And I hadn't seen my son, man, and I was still legally married at the time and all that. So Carolyn, me and her, we got a rental car, and she had never been to New York, and it was real close. So she wanted to go to New York, so she dropped me off in Jersey at my son's grandmother's house, right? And he had this little Power Rangers thing in his hand and shit, right? And we got the picture. Got a picture of I knocked on the door, man, and his mom came, act like she seen a ghost, you know? And, And I see my son, man. He's this little guy, man. And then when they called and asked me to do this workshop, I don't think a lot of people didn't know he was my son or whatever, because Tyrell's like a Zoomologist. All y'all know him on Zoom and shit, right? So when I talked to Carolyn, she said, Tyrell, that's your son? She said, is he the same one, that same little guy that we saw when I dropped you off at the house? I said, yeah, that's him, right? So the Hope Shop, man, my son grew up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, right? He grew up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, going to meetings, going to conventions, doing all that. When we had the little house at M&S, we was tearing down walls and shit and making the room bigger as the group grew and all that or whatever. And we had a little room for the kids, and we had somebody's teenager that would watch them. We had people cutting hair, selling barbecue, and all kinds of shit up in that joint, right? We did. You know, but they supported us. They would go. My son was an athlete. He played football, basketball, baseball, track, lettered, and all of it. Could have went anywhere, academic or athletic. He was a straight A student, and it still didn't deny him having his own experience. Right? What I do for a living, I help people for a living or whatever. Always have since I've been in. And the one person I couldn't really help was my son. Right? Yeah. So I'm doing all this great shit back then or whatever. I owned a treatment center, was doing some stuff or whatever. And my son, you know, I'm going to say this too. Sometimes, this is the, I love this part in the literature where it says, everything we know is subject for revision, especially what we know about the truth, right? It says that the steps help us sift through the contradictions and confusions of our life. 33 years later, I'm still sifting, y'all, and I'm on my 10th step now. But so my son and I, and even my other kids and I, some of us, we all share some same experiences, but we got way different views about what really happened. You know what I'm saying? Right? We do. We do. Right? Yeah. And so what happened? You know? My mother passed. I think it was 2015. 2005, because you were going to graduate in 2008. 2005, my mother passed, and it was weird, man. Me and my mother had a volatile relationship. I sold drugs in my mother's house. I used to get her high and stuff. My mother allowed me to do all kinds of crazy stuff, man, or whatever. And I didn't like her. You know, my neighborhood, she was the neighborhood mom. You could gamble, you could do whatever, you could cut school, and some people think that's cool. But it wasn't. When my mother passed, I remember, you know, going to the funeral, and Tyrell, my mother didn't have a relationship with my kids. Tyrell cried like a baby, right? And I was wondering, what the hell are they crying about? You don't know, right? And he said, I'll never forget this. He said, I'm looking at my dad, looking at his mom in a casket. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, right? Mm-hmm. And a little while after that, it was a football game, and he was the quarterback. And I went to the game, and his ass wasn't on the field. And I was like, "What the hell's my son?" Right? You know. School called me in Texas. They'll fine you $500 if your kid don't go to school, right? So they was trying to fine me for my kid not going to school. He had his little backpack on every morning, jetting out like he was going whatever. No, he was having his experience at that time, right? Wanting to be a rapper and shit, and you know, right? What happened was World Convention in San Antonio. No, that when that happened, I called the cops on my son, right? Because he was using, right? And I'm gonna say this is no lie, because this is the one thing I would have done different. My son really did. He asked for help. You know, he did. He said, Dad, I think I need to go to treatment. He was honest. He told me he was using. And I think my ego, my pride, my who people thought I was and what I did, and I had people in my life to say, they knew him as this athlete and this student. They was like, he ain't that bad. You know, whatever, whatever. I should have helped him then. You know what I mean? But what I did do was call the cops, tell them to bring the dogs in my house, right, and sniff around and shit, right? And they was gnawing on, he was in the bed asleep. They was gnawing on his foot and shit, right? Woke him up. And he said, my dad ain't never did shit for me in my life. I won't go live with my mom. I bought his ass a one-way ticket to Philly the next day, right? Because it hurt. You know what I mean? I've been raising him from 7 years old to whatever, you know, treating him like a king, but getting him whatever, you know. And when he said that, it, like, hurt to the core. And, like, he grew up in Texas living like a king, right? I grew up in Philly and Jersey. He didn't know what he was really going to. I did, you know. And when he got there, he had to have some experiences that I wish he hadn't had to have. You know what I mean? But, and he tells the story like that I kicked him to the curb or something. No, I honored your request. You know, your ass wanted to go, right? Right, yeah. That's how I looked at it, right? Yeah.
He did honor your request.
But he didn't talk to me for like 5 years, right? Yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. Around that same time when he left, my oldest son came down. I mean, weeks later. And my oldest son was like, he said, well, Dad, you know, I'm going through some stuff. I want to get my life together. I want to come stay with you. He had warrants out. He was running from the cops. He was trying to get out. He come to my house, and he was grown at the time. And I said, listen, I know you smoke, you drink, whatever. I don't give a fuck what you do. You just can't do it here, right? Mm-hmm. I would come home. He had old English bottles and Wild Irish Rose on my porch. I was like, they still drink that shit, right? Yeah. You know, he had blunts drying in my windowsill and shit, right? But in his mind, he was not using it in my goddamn house, right? So look, so I had to put his ass out too, right? Change the locks and everything, put him out, and he ended up on Rumberg, you know, down. And anybody know about Austin? He ended up on Rumberg, and somebody from the group, my son's grandmother lived in Atlanta at the time, and she says, Anthony, she said, go get him, you know, send him up here to me, you know, and I went to Rumberg where my son was, and he had everything he owned in this brown paper bag, and Charles, this guy that went with me, Charles was crying, right, and my son said, your boy crying, and you don't even give a fuck, right. And I put him on the Greyhound bus to his grandmother's, and his life changed, man. He held the same job for 15 years, got married, did whatever. You know, he hasn't surrendered to being one of us yet. You know what I mean? He's been to a few meetings, been to a few conventions, but he still lives like he lives. You know what I mean? You can do it, just not in my house. The Hope Shot. I got a daughter, Ty Babe, love her to death. And my daughter. She's had 5 children, all crack babies, never had custody of none of them. Grandmom raised 2, baby daddy raised 2, state has 2. And she's still out there smoking now, right? And giving it out of both panty legs, you know what I mean? I mean, hurts, you know? My daughter will text me at like 2 in the morning and ask me to cash app her $10 and shit, and sometimes I give it to her, sometimes I don't, right? Because she's my daughter and I love her, and I want to think that she needs hygiene, she needs food, she needs what? She's buying crack. I know what she's doing, right? 2 o'clock in the morning, $20, right? Right? But I'm dad. I love her, you know. The past six weeks has been like an eye opening experience for me. Talking about the Hope piece. I went to they were having a Williams family reunion, and I hadn't been to a family reunion since I was a kid, since I was like 9, 10 years old, before my father passed. And I was at a convention. I was speaking at a convention in Durham, North Carolina, right? Recently. And when I was a kid, we used to go to Henderson, North Carolina for these family reunions. So when I was at Durham and I was sharing, somebody came up after me and told me that Henderson was only like 30 miles from there. And I was like, really? So the next, before I left, I drove to Henderson. I called my sister, who remembers every goddamn thing, and she knew addresses and people's names. And I was like, so I'm like, I'm going to go show up at people's doors 50 years later or whatever, you know. Hey, this is Ant. You know, I'm your cousin, right? And so I did, though. I rode up the street a couple times by the houses, and the memories came back. I was like, that is it. That is really the house, you know? And one of the houses, there was somebody sitting in the carport. And so I drove up, and I got out, and I talked to the dude, and it was my cousin Michael. And he remembered, and they was like, we didn't know what happened to you, and this and that and that, or whatever. And I was like, wow. And he gave me his cousin Dean's number. Dean's in Atlanta right now in a VA hospital. I went to go see him. You know, people I hadn't seen in 50 years, right? Then I had the family reunion in Philly. My cousin Rick wanted me to go to. And the weird part, here's what I'm going to say about family, right? I think that blood is our relatives. Family, we get to choose our family, right? Like Narcotics Anonymous is my family. Yeah. People closer to me in this fellowship than my blood relatives, right? For real. And so when we went to this family reunion, whatever, I felt out of place. I didn't know none of them motherfuckers, you know what I mean? And, you know, and they didn't know me. And they were showing the little videos and the little history shit. Oh, no, right? One under was Rick and Gail, the two I was with. So I was uncomfortable, right? I didn't get no T-shirt, no, right? But right? But what happened was my sponsorship family was having a retreat up in Pittsburgh that same weekend. You know what I did? I left and took my ass to Pittsburgh, man. I did. And I hung out, man, and had a wonderful time, right? When I left Pittsburgh, I got a sister who lives in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, which is up by the Pocono Mountains, close to where I was at the VA at, right? And my sister Sheila calls me every Sunday morning, faithfully, like 8 o'clock, right? And loves me to death. She's closest thing to unconditional love. But anyway, I left Pittsburgh. And I went to my sister's house, and I was trying to beat that Sunday morning call. And when she got ready to call, I didn't answer. And so next thing you know, I call her, and I told her I was out in front of her house. And she said, "Don't play with me," right? And I said, "Look out your window." And she did, and it was me, right? And got to spend time with my sister, man. You know what I mean? Benefits, blessings of recovery, yeah. Right? The hope shot, right? My daughter Ty, babe, I went to see her at the. She lives in a crack motel. They in Jersey, if you they are homeless and all that, they put you up in motels and stuff, right? So that she goes from motel to motel and this and that and you know, some people don't want to be saved, man. You know, some people, unfortunately, you know, we can only be the hope shot. You know, we her brother's a hope shot. I'm a hope shot. You know what I mean? She's been to meetings and stuff. But I went to see her, man, at the motel she was in, and it just like broke my heart to see it. Almost looked like the fentanyl thing. She had little spots and shit and all that, man. She's light, probably about 98 pounds, soaking wet, you know. And I've offered to bring her to Atlanta, put her in treatment. But she said, "Okay, Dad." She said, "Well, I'll come, but I ain't willing to stay more than 10 days. And I got to go to a place that's co-ed. I don't want to be with just women." And I go, "Yo, wait a minute. Like, you can't tell help how to help you. Wait a minute. What do you mean, right?" She had all these stipulations for one that, right? Right? And, you know, so when I was in North Carolina too, at that convention, some of y'all know I got a friend, man, my brother Harold, right? Yeah. Harold was my sponsor for years. He was my best friend, my big brother, my father figure. We did this Texas thing together, you know, prison stuff. We did whatever. And my sponsor relapsed with over 30 years clean, man. You know, and when they had the world convention in Orlando, you know, because somebody called me on April Fool's Day and told me my sponsor had relapsed. And I was like, "Don't play with me like that," right? And it was true, right? And he went to the World Convention as a newcomer. And he knew Tyrell when Tyrell was, because everybody in Texas knows Tyrell when he's like from 7 to 17. You know what I mean? And watch, we grew, watched him grow up and all that. And Uncle Harold. When Tyrell was at the World Convention, he took a picture with Harold, and he had more clean time than him. And it fucked me up, right? Wow. You know? I'm going to make a statement that most of y'all in here aren't going to agree with, but it's my experience, right? There's a line in the basic text I don't personally agree with, right? And I'm not one of those people who believe everything in every book and all that. That's just me, right? But the part where, and this is my own shit, right? But the part where it says that, and I hate when people say it, when it says, "We have never seen a person fail who has followed this program." I know people with 20, 30 years who are living this program, going to meetings every day, sponsoring people, doing service or whatever. We don't know what life is going to throw at us. Right. We don't know what you're going to do when, whatever. Now, the best defense is having a program and being here or whatever, but ain't none of us in here relapse proof. You know, we all one bad decision away from a new clean day, right? For real. Like, I don't believe when it says a grateful addict won't use. You can't tell me my friend wasn't fucking grateful. You know what I mean? You know, and like, him and I never got a chance to have the conversation because you hear all the stories of other people that want to tell it or whatever. But when I saw him in North Carolina, me and him finally got a chance to like really rap and him we talk about what happened, right? And so, you know, I don't wish that on nobody, right? But ain't none of us in here. I don't care how much time, how much knowledge, how much money, how much whatever you got. You know, ain't none of us relapse proof. So that's just my own thing, right? But the hope shot is, if you to anybody in here, you know, one of the reasons why I came to Narcotics Anonymous and why I stay are two completely different things. You know, I came, you know, because I was trying to get out of all that bullshit. Right? I'm going to say this too. So when I was 19, I went to jail for attempted murder, aggravated assault, illegal weapons. They tried to give me 20 to life. They offered me 17 and a half for a plea bargain. And I was only 19, so that was my life, right? And I took it to trial. And people thought I was crazy as hell. This is even before Tyrone was born. You almost wasn't born. But But look. And I took it to trial, and I got found not guilty of everything, guilty as hell, right? Mm-hmm. And got acquitted or whatever. That was in 85. I didn't find the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous till 91. So I was still out there living that lifestyle even after that, street cred, crazy, all that or whatever. You know, but the blessing is, no matter what we've done, no matter where we've been, no matter, this is a program of hope for real, right? Yeah. And we can change no matter... Recovery, to me, is more about change than it is not getting high, but you got to not get high for the change to happen, right? You do. And you got to follow some guidance and direction from somebody else. My sponsor at the time, Thomas, said to me one time, he said, you got to believe that somebody might know what's better for you than you do, right? I had never even considered that until somebody said that shit. For real, you know, never, right? But it's true. So you got to take some guidance and some direction from some other people, man. And so this is a program of hope. You know, we do recover. I'm going to say some shut up for real.
Oh, that's what old timers say.
Yeah, right. But look, here's the hit. I'm going to say, I remember when I was new and everybody was going to school. People was getting GEDs. People in their 30s and 40s was going to college. I heard a couple workshops here talk about that, right? So I started going to school like everybody else, you know, back in 92 or 3. Took my first class, right? Austin Community College. Woo! Right? And I was knocking out a class here and there. You know, I was a freshman for about 15 years, right? Right? Yeah, right? And then I ended up in Tampa, and they had a college that was built for working adults or whatever. You go on evenings and weekends and all that, and I started doing that. And like somebody said earlier, I was never dumb. I just never applied myself in school. So I had a 3.8, 4.0, you know, whatever, was knocking the school piece out. But the pandemic hit, and everything went fucking online, or we call it virtual. I like a body. I like a people. I want somebody to cheat off or ask a question to. I'm like, no. I recently, so when pandemic hit, they froze our student loans. I'm being honest about this one. They froze our student loans and stuff, right? Or they was going to forgive stuff. So you didn't have to pay for a while. Well, we got a new administration. They want their money now, right? So I enrolled in school. I'm in school right now, right? I'm in school again. And I have 87 out of 120 credits toward my bachelor's. You know what I mean? I do. I'm 3 credits away from being a senior. 1 class, right? And they even told me they're going to give me 12 extra credits if I send them some CEUs. I sent them. They're going to give me 12 credits for that, right? And so I'm close, right? And one of my instructors, when I lived in Tampa, there was a home group member we had. She was one of the online instructors for this particular school. She was always trying to get me to take her class, and I never did, right? And I'm in her class, right? It's his wife, right? He didn't know it. I told him last night. I said, "Hey, man. I said I'm in school, and your wife is my biology instructor." He called her. She said, "Tell him to do some homework." We do recover, man. You know, we can do whatever. Anyway, great to be alive, clean, and getting better process. And y'all are in for a treat with myself. All right.
Yeah, thank you, Anthony.
I'm an addict seeking recovery. My name is Tyrell. I thank the God of my lack thereof understanding for another day alive and clean on this earth. I thank my sponsor, my network, my predecessors, and my sponsees, the men and women that I work with, for helping me when I don't know how to help myself. I would start off by paying homage to my predecessors. My sponsor is Nikita W. in Atlanta, Georgia. My home group is the Recovery at Work group, also known as the RAW group in San Antonio, Texas. We meet on Saturdays at 7 p.m., on Mondays at 8 p.m. We're an interactive literature and discussion group. We meet at, I don't even know, El Sedonro, El Sedero. What is it, Anthony? 62-something El Sedero. We move a lot. Let's just put it that way. But if you come on a Monday or a Saturday, them doors is going to be open. And we're going to be studying some literature, right? You know, and if you knew, I want to say welcome, right? You are the most important person in any Narcotics Anonymous meeting, comma, because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. You know, if you've never heard the Narcotics Anonymous message, our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs. First part, lose the desire to use. Second part, find a new way to live. Third part, it's a threefold message, right? We got a threefold disease, mental, physical, and spiritual, right? That's obsession, compulsion, and my total self-centeredness. You know, I get to do this a lot, right? And whether it's in person or a Zoomologist, like this guy said, right? Virtual. You know, I'm about that KCB life, if y'all know about that. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? That by any means necessary, you know. But dig, man, like, I get to do this a lot. And like, you know, I live shit and I breathe Narcotics Anonymous. Like, I love this program. You know, it truly has saved my life. You know, and I'm saying that to say, like, this is very special. You know, to get to recover with my father is an amazing journey, right? It's been crazy. You know, but it's been beautiful. You know, there's one thing he left out and why the significance of this convention is so important, right? Is Hackner in 1997, right? And he talked about the upbringing a little bit or a little bit of the background with 94 and 95. Like, that was the first time I ever met my dad, you know, in those years, right? 94 and 95. That's the only memories I had of my father, right? You know, but in 97, right? My dad ended up bringing me and my brother, the same brother that was drying wet blunts on the goddamn windowsill. He's 8 years older than me, right? He was a teenager. I was a little boy, right? And I sent him the picture, right? Because I don't know which hotel was at, right? But it was in, you know, it was Hackness Convention, right? We flew into San Antonio. We drove to Houston for that convention. So this is a real full circle moment for me, right? And a lot of people know, right, that, like, I'm moving back to Atlanta, right? And like, I'm on my victory tour right now. Like, I'm getting the fuck up out of Texas. Thank y'all. I love it. It's been great. But I've had a lot of experiences that I would have not liked to have here, you know, with some people that are very close, that are like family, right? You know, and because I believe that, right? Like, this is a, you know, this is a family disease, I believe, right? You know, and it's like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? You know, and like, you know, I want to share something about, like, that upbringing, man. Is like, I had we talk about how we live two lifestyles and one in Narcotics Anonymous, right? You know, but, like, I got to live two childhoods in one, right? Like, there was a story before my dad got me in 97, you know, and my mom, right, is, you know, she believes in different pathways of recovery. Let's just put it that way, right? You know, and the first time I tried to get clean, I got clean with my mom. Right, in 2009. He went about to go into the World Convention in 07, I think it was. Yeah, he was about to go into that. But we didn't go into that, right? Because he exiled me is what happened. You know, that's the word. You know what I'm saying? And that's what happened. But that was a good word, right? That was a good word. Right. All right, but dig, right? Like, you know, in 97, right? Like, my mother, she's one of us, right? You know, and she wasn't doing well. Like, my grandfather had died in 97, you know, and like, that was my mom's life. You know, she was a daddy's girl. She, like, when he died, the whole family was fucked up. And my grandma, right? Thank you for talking about grandma. My grandma, it's been a year removed. From losing my grandmother. We lost my grandmother May 22nd last year, that same weekend I was sharing at the Texas State Convention in a men's rep, right? Because we don't stop, right? No matter what, like, we got to keep moving. Like, the message has to be carried. Like, perseverance and steadfastness are spiritual principles, right? That, like, no matter what the fuck is going on, man, like, you know, the journey must continue, yes, right? And, like, recovery is a process of discovery, man. And when I talk about, like, you know, I cried so much, you know, in this last few years, you know, we're dealing with grief, you know, like, that grief that hits, it just ebbs and flows, right? It comes, it goes, and I'm grateful I drive for a living. Like, I'm a professional operator, right? I drive buses, and, like, I get to be on the road a lot when this shit happens, right? And like, it'd be God things happening, right? Like, I got these passengers. I work with disabled people, right? I know about those things. We strap them down all the time. You know what I'm saying? Wheelchairs, rollators, scooters, canes, walkers, visually impaired, hearing impaired. But I get to deal. I get to be a service for a living, right? You know, but sometimes when these things hit me, right, I'm on the bus and I'm driving, right? And I'm having these conversations with Miss Whoever, or Mr. Whoever, right? And we're talking about life, right? You know, and I get to share a little bit of me with them. This is why anonymity is such a beautiful thing. Right, I can break my anonymity at any given time. Right. It's not okay for me to break yours, right? And I'm not going to break this loving and caring fellowship's anonymity as well, right? I'm not going to tell them I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous unless they know, right? Because I wear this shit in public, right? I wear these chains and I wear these bracelets, and people know who we are, right? This is why our symbol, right, is the first assignment assignment that I go through with sponsees, is because, you know, y'all aren't going to like this here in Houston, but that symbol that we wear, right, is like the Dallas Cowboys star on the helmet.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? Look, right? I say that because, right, that's the thing that people see when they see us in public, right? They see those symbols. They know who we are, right? They know what that's about. They see them key tags hanging on our, you know what I mean? Some of y'all still doing it like this early 90s and wearing them down your leg, right? So your anonymity is broke, right? Your anonymity is broke at that point. We already know, right? But at the end of the day, man, like, I look at these things as like God incidents in my life, right? These things that happen. But like, when I go back to that time, man, it's like I dealt with a lot of insecurities, right? Inadequacies, low self-esteem, probably low self-worth. And I'm talking about at 5, 6 years old, right? Because, like, my friends had mom and dad in the house. Yeah. Like, I didn't know the life that I lived was dysfunctional, right? I didn't know, like, you know, you shouldn't eat the motherfucking Wheaties, right? Because they're dark cereal, Raisin Bran, because we got roaches in the goddamn house, right? You know what I mean? And, like, you know, I come from that background where grandma was a hoarder and everything is everywhere, right? You know, and but I got that love. Like, you know, I used to refer to my grandma as an earthly angel, right? Like, the most purest person that I've ever met in my life. My grandma ain't never cursed nobody out, you know, ain't never kicked, you know, ain't never did nothing but try to help people, right? You know, and like, everybody, she was everybody's grandma in the hood. Everybody, all the dope boys, right? All the trappers, all the gang members know my grandma. The police know my grandma. The people at Acme know my grandma. That's H-E-B for y'all who don't know what Acme is. But the same thing, right? Like, she was that public figure, man. And my grandfather served in the military like my father, right? Like, he did that thing, man, where he took, you know, he made that money, man. He made that name. He worked at General Motors for 20 years, right? You know, and he made that, like, for black people at that time, like, that was big to buy a house in the suburbs. And it ain't the suburbs no more. You know what I'm saying? But, like, you know, once they got Section 8 and all that shit started coming, like, it's the hood. Like, you look at Willingboro, New Jersey, you won't see very nice things, right? We sit in the middle of Camden and Trenton, New Jersey, right? That's where we sit at. Philly is 25 minutes away, right? All the, like, you know, I always say Jersey's like, you know, the devil's next door neighbor. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's fucked up in Jersey. That's why our hockey team is the New Jersey Devils. You know what I'm saying? Like, it all makes sense when you put it together. You know what I'm saying? As y'all see, I love sports. I love to make these analogies. But at the end of the day, man, like, I found that, like, at that time in my life, there were some other things that happened, right? Because I had an absent father, right? Because I was a mama's boy, and I had these brothers and sisters, and, like, my two oldest ones, they're 8 years older than me. They was already getting high, right? And when I was, like, 7 years old, that was the first time I had drugs in my body. I probably was a little younger than that. 5, 6 years old, the first time I had drugs in my body, because they thought it was cool to get the kid fucked up, right? And I remember one of my earliest stories is, like, they got me drunk, man, and I was in the living room swimming on the floor, right, talking about my arms and legs are broken, right? Like, you know, I was a fish or something. I don't know what it was, right? But my grandpa came out at this time because he was still alive, right? And he was, you know, yelled at everybody on the porch. He meant, who done got the goddamn kid fucked up? Beat my mom up. Everybody caught it that day, right? You know, but that was the making of an addict, right? You know, page 3 of Who's an Addict talks about, we did not choose to become addicts. We suffer from a disease which expresses itself in ways that are antisocial, that make detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficult, right? You know, so I believe that, like, you know, it's not about the substance, right? You can argue whoever the fuck you want about, like, this is a drug program. No, our literature states that this is a program of addiction and recovery, right? You know, that's what we do in Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah, we work with these people, right, that'll send you all here, and then y'all get them papers signed and all that good shit. But, like, that ain't Narcotics Anonymous, right? Them places that we go because we don't got nowhere to live when we first get clean and shit, I ain't going to endorse it. But, like, y'all know them places that, you know, they call them something-something houses and all these, you know, blah, blah, blah places and all that good shit. Like, we love that, right, because we need a place to live and we need people, right, because, like, that's community is important. Yeah. Right? And what this program talks about, this is a fellowship of men and women from drugs that become a major problem. Right? So, like, we got to go places. And then there's some of those other places that also follow the same, manuscript that we use. Right? They don't accept us in those places. Right? Mm-hmm. So, like, when we go into that type of, you know, you get fucking confused, man. Right? You go into these societies where there's, you know, you got this A, that A, this A, triple A, MA, fucking UFC A, MMA. You know what I'm saying? And then you add us to it. It's a lot of shit going on, man, right? You know, and I've gotten the opportunity to sponsor a lot of people that's in there, right? You know, and one of my guys is an electrician journeyman, right? You know, been with him for about 6 years. Because we're talking about family, right? And I love what my pop said, right? They don't mean the blood all the time, man. Like, it's the people that come into our lives and make sure that they want to be a part of it. They show us, man. You know, and this dude, man, he's fucking crazy. He won't do a first step. You know, he had in a fictitious four years clean at one point, right? He was picking up key tags, being a service. He's a founder of the group, the Raw group that we started in San Antonio, right? But he's sitting up in one of those places right now, one of them houses, right? With he crashed a motorcycle, right? Shattered his ankle, sitting up in there, right? And I'm like, bro, you still don't want to do a first step yet? You know what I'm saying? Like, you still don't see the unmanageability in your life, right? And I'm talking about, like, I'm the type of sponsor, right, that, like, you know, I went to go babysit his kids for a fucking week. Three of them. 10, 12, and goddamn 16, right? While the wife goes out there to go for moral support, because I knew it wasn't no paperwork or nothing getting done. But she went on a vacation for a few days, right? And like, I'm going to transition this into, like, me being a parent, right? Because I have a 9-year-old son. You know, and he's in Atlanta, Georgia, right? He's a recovery baby. He's an NA baby, right? His mother's in Narcotics Anonymous. He has a grandfather in Narcotics Anonymous. He has another grandmother who just passed that was in Narcotics Anonymous with 31 years clean, right? Like, this kid is very well preconceived, right, to being an addict. He got it in him, right? And I look at him sometimes, and I'll be like, certain shit that he does, you know what I'm saying? I'll just be like, I gotta watch this shit, right? You know, but over that week, right, that I was babysitting, right, I talked to my son regularly, right? I've been in my son's life from day one. I was there to cut the umbilical cord, right? I was there to fucking every doctor's appointment prior to that. You know what I'm saying? Every you know. And listen, right, to the newcomers, I don't know if there's any in here, right? Like, I'm that newcomer, right, that when I was new, right, I met another newcomer, right? And then 9 months later, we had a newcomer baby, right? You know what I'm saying? So, like, these are things that happen, right, in this process, right? So I didn't come into Narcotics Anonymous a parent, right? And I'm just sharing that to say that part, right? But, like, my kid, I don't know, this last week was, like, the week of hell, man. Larry knows what the fuck I'm talking about. You know, these kids, man, like, I ended up getting bit by a spider over there. I had these, like, tiger stripes, like, on my legs. Like, I didn't know what it was. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I had to get bit by something. Wasn't there before, you know what I'm saying? And then they got this dog from fucking hell. You know what I'm saying? He's in the cage. If you don't cover it with a blanket, he's just barking. You know what I mean? He will bite you. This dog is, like, it's crazy. He got white eyes. It's a beautiful, beautiful dog, but it's a demon, right? And I was just like, look. Look, on my job, I don't have a set schedule, right? So I work from 3:30 a.m. in the morning to 3:30 the next day. I can be called at any given time to work, right? And they got to give me 9 hours in between. That's the one grace period, right? But I got these kids, right, that I'm taking. Look, they playing hooky on me. They don't want to go to school. You know what I'm saying? The first day. Look, first morning. The youngest one, right? And my son is 9. He's 10, right? This kid's 10. And I've been watching him, right? I told you, I've been watching him since he's like 4 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's 10 now. And he hits me with the, yo, I'm not going to school. Got his mom on speakerphone. I'm like, the hell you aren't, motherfucker. Oh, and Journey misses the school bus, right? So I'm like, the hell y'all aren't, man. Get your backpack, brush your teeth. You know, we going to school. I got to go to work today. You know what I'm saying? Like, but the structure, right? And like, the foundation, I didn't even know I was going to go in this direction. But, like, in this family piece, like, it means a lot to me. Right. You know, and I've had some experiences with family, you know, people that I refer to or at one point in time as family. Right. They're like, you know, because family will hurt you, you know, more than anybody else will, you know, and I know that to be a fact, man, because like life and recovery, like we can laugh and we can joke. Right. But I want to read this 10th tradition piece. Right. And this is in Guiding Principles. It says that we don't always share an elegant, tidy message. And when we don't rate or police each other sharing. Many members may connect with a raw emotional expression, right? There goes that raw piece, right? While others may relate to a quiet, thoughtful share. Sharing in a meeting is both personal and courageous, no matter what we share. There's no such thing as sharing perfectly, right? Each of us struggles sometimes to get to the heart of the matter or to find a message of hope in our experience. And that struggle is part of the process for us. Placing unity first and anonymity at the foundation allows the message to shine through, even in the most awkward moments of a meeting, right? And I'm sharing this experience because, like, you know, the chosen family, the people that I get to choose, man, like, you know, I got clean in New Jersey, right? A lot of people, and it's funny, Pop, right? Like, when a lot of people, you know, from Texas for sure, right? Yeah. When they be like, oh, man, I remember when you was, you know, a baby. And I'm like, no, you don't. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't even with them till I was 7. You know what I'm saying? But, like, no, you stop lying. No, you weren't there. You know what I'm saying? It's cap. The kids, right? The kids are saying, it's cap. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, you know, I understand where it's going, right? And like, you know, with growth, right, you know, with age comes wisdom, right? You know, and I'm one of them people that I got clean young, right? I got introduced at 19. The shit didn't, I couldn't do it, right? You know, I got 90 days abstinence. I did the whole fake it till you make it shit, right? But the foundation, right? Let's talk about that seed for a second, right? That seed that was planted in 1997, right, with my father. Right, I knew the Serenity Prayer was one of my first prayers. The Herald, my Uncle Harold, he talking about, he always shares this story about when I was a kid, right, and I prayed one time or something like that. He was like, damn, man. Like, he prayed like a grown-ass man, right? It's because I be around 40, 50-year-old people all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just got that old soul, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, man, like, you know, when I'm looking at the parenting piece and, like, you know, and living clean, man, it's a really, really good section, right, on parenting, yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, and as well as family. But I want to go into parenting right fast because it's one part that always shakes me up. And it gets me emotional because I'm one of them parents, man, that, like I said, like, it's unorthodox now, right? Like, I've been out of my son's life on an in-person basis longer than I was in his life. I left Atlanta in 2019 when my son was 3 years old, right? It's 2025. My son about to be 10, right, coming up. And it's like, even though I fly in and I fly out and I play super dad and I fucking pay child support and I do all of these responsible, productive member of society things, there's nothing like the one-on-one thing, man. There's nothing like picking my son up from school and, like, knowing his teachers, right, and going to the daycare. Like, that's the dad that I know, right, because I have a fucking great example, man. Like, my dad growing up was my best friend, right? And like, when he talks, he said 5, it was 7 years that I didn't talk to my dad, right? And that, the only reason I talked to my dad, because I got a get-out-of-jail-free card, right? I was locked up, and he was like, yo, listen, I don't know what the fuck you're doing out there, but you might want to stop, because this is it. Like, this is it. I was on somebody else, minutes on the phone. I remember one of my OGs on the block. Like, I was on his phones on the minutes, and somehow my mom got my dad on the phone or whatever, right? And he bailed me out that one time, and a couple weeks later, I was locked up again, right? And that's just the fact of the matter is, like, you know, we don't follow directions well, man. But I'm looking for this parenting, right? It's page 145, right? You know, but that unorthodox piece, right? Because I'll start to feel the unworthiness, right? I'll start to feel the, like, I'm not the dad that I want to be, right? And that sends me into a fucking place, man. Because my, like, look, man, there was one thing before my son was even born that I had let my son's mom know. Like, a kid is not going to make me stay with you, right? Like, pussy is dime a dozen, man. Like, I'm not staying with you, you know, out of the fact that, you know, for love. You know what I'm saying? Like, if this shit don't work, it don't work. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very much a realist today, right? And this is at a couple years clean, right? With a second step in my life, a firm, right, second step in my life. Like, my son is going to be in the care of, right? You know, and I had to understand, like, you know, if that shit, and it didn't work out, right? There were some things that happened. Like, I had to talk about calling the cops on me. I had to call the cops on her. You know what I'm saying? One time, and I felt like the biggest bitch in the world. I'm the one people call the cops on, you know what I'm saying, all the time, and I'm doing it. It's crazy, but it talks about in here, right? Right? It talks about right here on page 47, right? It's parenthood is one area where our self-centeredness can do real harm, right? It says working a program of recovery keeps us from getting drawn into our self-obsession. It helps us to see when we are recreating old patterns that we don't want to carry on to the next generation, right? Like, and there's something my dad shared with me, and I don't know if he knows how much this stuck, but it was, I don't think my son was even here yet. I think she was still pregnant, right? But he said something that somebody told him, right, was that, like, having a child is going to force you to become less self-centered, right? And I didn't understand that shit, right? It went straight in that one in one ear, one out the other ear, right? And it took, like, 5-6 years for it to kick in, right? And like, I got into this place, man, and, like, but there was the thing, right, that I told my son's mom is, like, I'm not going to not be in my son's life. Like, my family take care of theirs. You know, that's my mama's favorite thing to say. Like, the sister he talked about, my older sister, Ty, she done had 10, 11 kids, right? Never raised none of them, right? 4 of them in the system. 2 of them died in the birth. The rest of them, our family didn't raise. You know what I'm saying? You know, and, but there's just that piece, man, that, like, I get that, like, when I told her, like, that, you know, I stood on business. You know what I'm saying? That, like, I'm going to be a part of my, no matter how hard you make this shit for me, right? Because she does shit. Well, she did shit. We're in a great place today. Let me say that. I'm going to share a great place today, right? Like, I've been in Texas almost 6 years. This June, right, my son got to come to Texas for the first time, right? We got to take him to the monster truck rally in Austin, right? I got to show him where daddy grew up at. Like, some of my schools I went to, right? The pools that I swam in. I got to take him to Barton Springs, and he can't swim. That's the funniest shit, right? Like, these kids wear these little life vests and shit that, like, look like T-shirts. So this whole time, I've been taking him swimming his whole life. I thought he was really swimming, like, but he was not swimming. Like, he was like, Daddy, I can't swim. And I'm like, stop playing. I'm ready to just throw him in the pool, you know what I'm saying? That's how they taught us how to swim. Just go in, you know, get out there, right? But, it's... Look, but it was like that experience was priceless, man. Like, I fucked up my money. My dad was on my ass about that because I wanted to create that experience, man. Like, I wanted him. It wasn't no. There was no going to happen. Like, anything you want to do, we're doing it, right? And I'm learning that's parenting out of guilt sometimes, right? And that's people pleasing, Tyrell, right? And though I got a foundation and like boundaries with her today, right? Like, I'm not one of those dudes that go back and forth with my baby mom. Like, that's, and I had to learn that, like, my language is important. Like, I don't refer to her as a baby mom. I said, that's my son's mother, right? You know, she's, you know, listen, that's a whole nother story, because I got some bad language, right? But I've been getting better, and I'm not even working on it. It's just something that happens to the spirit, right? I just finished another 11th step, right? You know, and I processed that 11th step with sponsor a couple weeks ago. You know, because it's important to talk about our step work and where we're at in the process. That shit is not bragging. Hopefully, it's going to be inspiring for you to do some fucking step work, right? You know, hopefully, right? But at the end of the day, man, it ain't about, like, it talks about, you know, this message, right? Like, you know, words mean nothing, right? You know, how does it go, Larry? It's more powerful than words. It's meaningless unless we live it. Right? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, this is what this shit is about. Like, does my audio match my video? Right? You know, am I allowing, like, am I sharing Gucci and living Walmart? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking about, like, these are the things that, you know, ultimately, like, when I live the program, IP number 9, right, and living the program, right, where I do my own checks and balances at the end of the day, whether it's mental, whether I'm writing it down, you know, physically, like, I'm able to see, like, how the fuck is you really living, Tyrell? Yeah, you share good. Yeah, people want you to come here and come there, fly you here. Look, January, I was in Fargo, North Dakota. February, I was in Atlanta, Georgia. March, I think I took a break. April, I was in Los Angeles, California, right? Fort Worth in, like, June or something like that. So it's like God continues to use me as a vessel, a conduit, and doing this, right? But I believe that, like, what comes from the heart touches the heart. You know, and like, the relationships that I have with my family today, you know, it's just amazing, man. Like, you know, for like two years out of the six that I've been here, I got the opportunity for my baby sister to come live with me. Right? Like, I have my little sister, my baby sister. That's my closest relative. Wow. Like, I love her so much. Right? And, like, she went back so she could go take care of our mother. Right? Because my mom got COPD. She got emphysema. She got diabetes. Right? Because of the uses of substances, right? Abusing her body all of those years, man, it done caught up, right? And I'm going to get into a mature topic, right? It's like physical health in recovery, right? Like I'm talking about this now because, like, somebody in my life that's very special to me, right, is pointing these things out to me. Like why haven't you made a doctor's appointment? Like, when... My dad, like, when's the last time you've been to the dentist, right? And I got these people around me in my life, right, that want better for me, right, than I want for myself sometimes, right? And I'm still learning how to fucking be an adult first and foremost, you know what I'm saying? So it's like all that, like, having a 401k and having medical benefits and, like, all of these things are new to me, right? I'm a dope boy. Like, I'm used to selling dope, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not used to going to work and shit like that. This is some new shit that Narcotics Anonymous introduced me to. You know what I'm saying? You know, and it's still frustrating, right? And it's still, you know, a lot of learning curves, right? But I've been getting a lot better, too, right? Like, I'm paying my bills. Because I'm the type, like, I ain't gonna lie, man, I don't know about y'all. Like, I'll go to the convention when my lights need to be paid. I'll go pay for the flight, right, until I get home one day from work and I hit a switch. And my lights don't turn on. And then I call these folks and they say, yeah, it's going to be like $657 to get them turned back on. And I'm like, fuck. Talk about unmanageability in your life, right? That shit don't feel good, man. You know, but man, like, I love, I'm going to go one more place. I think I'm going to go, because I got, like, I can see it. Thank you. You've been more gracious with the time, sir. You know what I mean?
I hate comments.
But look, right? I'm gonna stay in the family section, right? But in chapter 5, page 143, right, it's a piece where it says, some of our hardest moments contain the keys to healing deep and painful scars. Right? I'm always one of those people that look. I talk about, you know, I get it out, right? Like, I get to the exact nature. Right, and in our literature, it works on why it introduces me to this concept, right, where it says my defects of character, right, the exact nature of my wrongs are my character defects, right, and I didn't know that for a long time, right, and when I get into, like, learning what these character defects are, right, and triangle self-obsession, right, it breaks it down real simple. It says anger, resentment, and fear, right, all of our character defects stem from these three areas, right, you know, and like, so I'm scared of a motherfucker that got 1,000 character defects. Right? Because they only stem from three areas, right? Which one am I going to put in based on our literature, right? And that's just one of the things that I found, because I wrote on like 56 of them, right? And then I looked at how they were worded. Gotcha. So in closing, right, I know that some of y'all got relatives, right, that use dope. I know y'all probably got kids that use dope, right? If you're looking at me, you're looking at him, that's a message of hope, right? That's the vision that, like, you know, this too, you know, can happen for you, right? And I know I've heard, man, I hear some stories, man. I watch people bury their kids, man. That it's in reverse. Like, that's not the natural process of life, right? And I've been losing friends, man, and I've been losing so many people, right? But one thing I know is that, like, I must continue on this path, right? Like, I can't stray away from here because, like, if using dope is the question, you know what I mean? Is the answer, like, what the fuck is the question, right? Because, look, this program works if you work it, right? It works if you don't work it. It just won't be working for you. That's all I got. Thank y'all.